welcome to episode 25 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Mark.
And on this episode, we're going to be reviewing the newest entry into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Ant-Man. We're going to be re-watching Troll 2. Good God. We're also going to be discussing our favourite independent movies of all time. That should be an interesting one. And we're going to be skipping back in time to 2005. And we've got a couple of special guests on the show as well, so stay tuned for that. Oh, and a new feature. So, let's get started.
On the last episode, chaps, I set you the task of top three independent films.
You did?
Yep. I've ordered some Starbucks in for this discussion, mm-hmm. So I think it will be quite sort of Starbucksy.
Nope.
I'm going to throw it straight to you, Ben.
Okay.
Give it to me.
I just want to start by saying first, This topic was really odd, because I thought, like Mark did, it was going to be quite a Starbucksy topic. We were going to come out with these. But how many films haven't actually been produced by major studios?
Yeah, it's huge, yeah. Yeah, I was surprised because I basically did a bit of a Google search, as you tend to look at sort of what are notoriously the best and biggest independent films, thinking it would be all these little Starbucks, you know, chai latte films. But they were there's a lot of big name films that we love.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that difficult. What I've done then to try and counteract that is to try and talk about films that I haven't spoken about already. I've gone with three films that I absolutely love, one of which I have spoken about already, but I couldn't really leave it off the list. So I'm going to launch off with The Usual Suspects.
Nice.
Yeah.
Which it had never crossed my mind that this was an independent film, but it is. It wasn't produced by a major studio. As you know, it was directed by Bryan Singer, one of his first films. Brilliant film. The greatest twist, or one of the greatest twists in film history. Mm-hmm. Kevin Spacey at his absolute best. One of the things I think that marks out an independent film when you don't have the major studio back in is the budget. So the budget for this film was $6 million. The same budget as the room. Yeah. So, but
that's my number three.
I really hope you're joking. How could they have been made for the same budget? Because when you think of the Usual Suspects, and there are some big sort of action set pieces, the bits at the docks and so on, you think, I can see where the $6 million went. Oh, and the fact that they also hired Kevin Spacey, Benicio del Toro, Gabriel Byrne, et cetera, et cetera. That's where the money went. And then you watch The Room and you think, well, they had some pictures of spoons and an American football and some rented tuxedos. Where did the $6 million go?
Let's leave that for another episode.
we're going down the room rabbit hole again. So yeah, let's leave that for now. But The Usual Suspects, great, great film. The one thing that always threw me about that film, and I don't know, I can't work out whether it makes storyline sense or if it was bad casting. You know how Pete Postlethwaite is in the film and he plays Mr. Kobayashi?
Yeah.
Pete Postlethwaite is probably the Englishest man that ever lived. He's dead now, shame. But he was incredibly English. And he was playing the Japanese Mr. Kobayashi. Now, I know that Kobayashi was one of the names that Verbal Kint just saw on the board and used it in his tale. And then you see Pete Postlethwaite driving away as his driver later. But you think, if this was a fantasy that he was creating, why wasn't Kobayashi Japanese in the fantasy? Why was it Pete Postlethwaite, who clearly isn't even partly Japanese?
Maybe he was trying to offer up some semblance of the ridiculousness of his tale to the police to see if they could figure it out.
So you think during the tale he went, oh, by the way, this Kobayashi fellow I've referred to quite a bit is a Northern Englishman, just in case you were wondering.
Or maybe no Japanese people auditioned for the role.
Could be that. But then change the name, call him Mr. Smith.
He's a great lad.
I'm always amazed by the fact that I always forget this is a Bryan Singer film.
Yeah.
I always forget it's one of his earlier pieces, and yeah, fair play, that guy's done pretty well since then.
He's done all right, isn't he, with the whole X-Men thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Shame about Superman. But
yeah.
Let's not talk about that already.
Although, if you are interested in Superman films, we actually do have a documentary special that we've done for the documentary Death of Superman Lives, What Happened, where we interviewed John Schnepp and Holly Payne, so check it out.
Available on Podomatic and iTunes.
Also an independent film.
Correct.
A very good independent film.
Yeah.
So, Adam, lovely plug.
No problem. So I'm going to lead off with probably a film I've spoken about before, anyway, Reservoir Dogs.
Yep. It's my number two. I might as well just put that out there.
So. Yeah, it had to be in there. Mm-hmm. It's my favourite Tarantino film.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people say Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
For me, it's Reservoir Dogs. I'm a big fan of Tim Roth in general, and the role he plays in this is just gets the best out of him for me.
I assume that you've been to see the FIFA film starring him as Sepp Blatter then.
Has anybody seen that?
I've managed to avoid that so far due to the sheer propaganda.
Yeah.
I remember Tim Roth actually saying about that film, I got the script and said, where's all the corruption? but no, Reservoir Dogs, it's great. The way it's structured as well, it's just an unbelievable visual spectacle.
Yeah.
For what it is, and again, it's surprising to realise that most of Tarantino's career has been independent film. He's never really had the big studio backings.
No, like all of his earlier films were financed by Miramax, Harvey Weinstein's company, and I think they call them like a mini major, but they're still an independent. But yeah, just having one of those smaller backers behind you has allowed him to keep his independence and make the films he wants to make.
And yeah, Harvey Keitel in this is unbelievable.
Yeah.
I love Reservoir. I think I actually had it in my list of top five of all time, we're actually revisiting on our anniversary.
Two episodes time, I think, will be our anniversary episode. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it had to be in there, Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah. When I love this film so much, and it was the first Tarantino film I ever saw. And I remember when I was at school, I went to this posh school, and we had different houses, and my house was Master's house, and we used to do this thing called house evenings, where the pupils could get together and do things like act out scenes, or if they were in a band, they could play music, you know, do different things. And it was always really boring, pretentious stuff, like little people getting up with their little violins and whatnot. Me and my mate Luke were obsessed with Reservoir Dogs, a film that we shouldn't have been watching because we were about 13, and we kept watching it to the point where we could pretty much quote the whole film. And we managed to convince our housemaster to let us, for house evening, put on a performance of Reservoir Dogs. So we wrote in our biology lesson, I remember us doing this vividly, we wrote out like a mini version of the script focusing around the whole ear cutting scene, and we managed to rope in a couple of our friends and we performed a section from Reservoir Dogs.
Is this on video anywhere?
I don't believe it is, no one I know has it on video. Someone might have it out there. I wish they did.
It's before smartphones and things like that.
Yeah. True, so. That's amazing.
Yeah, it was. I think on it now, and I think that we were literally 13, 14. Why our school let us do that. As I say, I went to a posh school. This wasn't a fuck about school. How they ever let us get away with this, I don't know. We obviously didn't swear.
No.
But we kept in the ear cutting and we had a liberal use of fake blood.
I love the fact that when we've made Mac and Me 2 and The Room 2, mm-hmm. people look back at your early scripts and you would have done Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say that I did Reservoir Dogs because I don't want Tarantino to
sue me. You do your take on it, though, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, he didn't sell tickets to this. He didn't earn any money off of the story from Reservoir Dogs.
No,
I also think my childhood wasn't as good because the only thing I ever got invited to was a public soggy biscuit game, and I wasn't up for that, so...
Why would that be public? Other than, I know, like, rugby teams do it in the...
Oh, the public school nearby invited me to come and attend that
one. They invited you specifically?
They
just
said,
you?
All they said to me, we're having soggy biscuit and we want you to come. That's all they said. That's all they said. I don't know if it was an invite and genuine, but I don't know.
We played football at my school.
I wish we had. My
first choice is from the 80s.
There's a surprise.
So it's a masterpiece.
Yeah.
It's by Peter Jackson and it's called Bad Taste.
Yep, familiar with it, yeah.
It's a horror film that he filmed, and I didn't realise it took this long, over 4 years, and he did it in the weekends. He self pretty much funded it himself, acted in it, directed it, wrote it. Have you ever seen it?
No, I'm familiar with it. I haven't seen it.
I've not. I can't.
When you think this guy then went on and did like The Frighteners and then he did Lord of the Rings, you'd never think that he made this film. It's literally very small budget, but they just capture this magic, and he just showed why he could then go on and do these big things like Lord of the Rings. Watch it if you can at some point. There's no rush of coming back in a few episodes time because you won't probably like it, but you'll respect it and you'll think, for the guy to do this on his own back, fund it, do it himself, it is really, really good. And if you ever speak to any fans, you know, when we go to cons and see mm-hmm. horror fans, they all love Bad Taste. You've seen it on T-shirts. It's really well respected.
Is it the one where on the front cover it's a guy, like a weird alien thing, giving the finger?
Yeah. It's really, really good. And the fact is, they did genuinely give him then loads of money to go and do The Frighteners from this.
Yeah.
So it's like his audition. Mm-hmm. So you can't get much more independent than the fact he did it all himself at weekends over 4 years, and it is a masterpiece.
Yeah, I'll check it out. I was just thinking, on the last episode, I did say that before this episode, I would watch Trollhunter.
Yeah.
Have you?
But the reason why I haven't is because I watched Troll 2, and that was as much as I could take troll-wise. I couldn't bring myself to watch.
We'll get to that later.
I'd had me fill of trolls, put it that way.
What did I say I'd watch? I was supposed to watch something.
Oh, yeah.
That's public soggy biscuit game.
No, I forgot. You definitely went to forgot, but when we listen back, we'll do it one day.
Oh, it was the Old Boy remake.
Oh, yeah. I didn't watch it because it shined. I'm not going to. I'm going to keep putting it off. So you've kind of had your number two.
I've done my number two already, so let's spin on to Adam.
I wonder what the smell was.
No, it's all good.
So my number two is This Is England.
Oh, nice. Cool. Yeah.
Very cool.
Shane Meadows' film. Mm-hmm. Absolutely fantastic commentary on Britain in the 80s. And the rise of the National Front. I often find with this film, when you watch it, I was born in the 80s, so I didn't actually live through it. You kind of realise that a lot of what happened in this country in the 80s was just fucking disgraceful.
Yeah, to put it bluntly.
Seriously bad. I mean, youth gangs on the streets who were literally going around harassing people of different races. And he just captured it perfectly.
Sounds like living in Shrewsbury now.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
But no, there's certain moments that kind of stick in your mind. I think, you know, when they go into the sort of shop owned by the Asian man and just start abusing him for no reason. It's horrendous.
Yeah.
But it's a great way of showing how the youth of this country got suckered into it. Obviously, Thatcher was the big enemy of the 80s for most people. But people use this as an excuse to turn, I guess, people's attention towards the West Indian population and Asian population of the country as well. And obviously the National Front were a big part of that.
Yeah. It's about the youth being disenfranchised and latching onto things, but latching onto the wrong things, destructive things.
Very, very powerful film. Yeah. I want to watch it again.
Instead of going against the government, they're going against the common man.
Yeah. Going off on a slight tangent, you know the TV show Life's Too Short?
Yes.
You know Warwick's assistant, that girl? Is she in the film of this? She's in the film. I couldn't remember if she was in the film or the TV series.
Yeah,
or
she's
both.
In both. Yeah, Smell.
Yeah. I like her.
And then it all obviously culminates to a head with Combo, Stephen Graham's character, who is amazing. Like, Stephen Graham is unbelievable in this film.
He's unbelievable in everything, Stephen Graham.
Attacking Milky, who is the mixed race lad in the film.
Yeah.
Just because he basically hates the fact that the guy's mixed race.
Yeah.
And it all culminates to that, and obviously the young lad Tommy ends up disbanding his affection for the National Front.
Mm.
Incredibly powerful film.
Yeah, kind of has some similar themes to American History X in that way.
Yeah.
I love that film.
That'd be an interesting double bill, wouldn't it, if you really wanted to depress the fuck out of yourself?
Yeah, so listeners, if you're ever, you know, feeling a bit down, listen to Radiohead, sit there, do this double bill, and I was going to say, let us know what you think, but you'd probably be dead.
Yeah.
Moving swiftly on to a more positive film. Another one from the 80s from me.
Yeah, of course it is.
Sam Raimi directed.
Yeah.
One of his first films. Bruce Campbell.
Yeah.
The Evil Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Again, funded themselves. Three of them went out over a few months. I think it was in 1979 they started filming. And again, you saw potential. That's why he's gone on and done masterpieces like Spider-Man 3. Yeah, great lines. But no, but seriously, like, Evil Dead is one of the most cult, well-respected horror films out there. Again, I don't think either of you have seen these films, so it's wasted. But there's a lot of people out there that I know have a lot of respect for this. And it did set a lot of decent, and even the sequels are good. I love Evil Dead 2. I love Army of Darkness, and now we're getting a TV series.
And a new film as well, aren't we?
Yeah, the film's supposed to be a while off, I think. We've got the remake, which I don't want to talk about. That's as bad as probably Old Boy did for the original. It's despicable. But yeah, we're getting a brand new TV series as well. But I love Bruce Campbell in that film. He's funny. It's pretty horrific. You know, there's a scene of a woman being raped in the woods by a tree. And it's very graphic. So.
Now, when you say by a tree, do you mean she's being raped by the tree or near to the tree? Is the tree committing the rape, or is it in the proximity of the rape?
The tree itself is entering her.
Right.
Picture that now.
So the tree is committing it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not like
she's
by
not
a
just
tree. By
the tree.
Yeah.
She's not
some
getting
bloke's
raped
raping
near
her by
to
a tree.
Tree.
No,
not,
the tree's raping her.
Okay, now
by another tree
that,
as well. So, yeah, it's absolutely fantastic film. I believed it was not up for any Oscars or any major awards, but you talk to anyone that loves horror,
Oh, I know how huge these films are. I know how beloved the franchise is. Yeah,
and they actually borrowed all the equipment themselves. They're like they're wannabe filmmakers. It was never going to work, but if you ever get time, add it to the list, Ben. You never will. But Evil, one day we'll do a horror-thon and we can educate you both and we can watch these classics.
It is as has been established many times on this show. I'm not really a horror fan, but it is one of those films or one of those franchises that I have wanted to watch because I love Bruce Campbell. Bruce Campbell's ace.
He's a god.
And I know how well-respected these films are. And I know they're a sort of a bit tongue-in-cheek, a bit fun as well, aren't they? They're not just out-and-out horror. So I would actually like to watch them.
We'll do it soon.
Cool.
In a wood in the middle of nowhere.
I'm not going anywhere near
and
a tree.
I'm going to watch you get raped by a tree.
Shame.
Go on, then.
I will finish it off with one that I have discussed previously, so I'm not going to discuss it in too much detail, but it's Donnie Darko.
Nice.
Yeah.
Which to me just sums up independent filmmaking for me. It's low budget. I think it was about $4.5 million. It's a very big idea, but on a small scale, which I think is what independent film often is. It's these great worldly ideas, but done on a small scale because you have to, because you only have the budget for a small scale. It's a great story. It was Jake Gyllenhaal's breakout role. I don't think I'd seen him in anything prior to this. You had Patrick Swayze, who was brilliant in this, and he had his kiddie porn dungeon. It's just a fantastic film, a real thinker. It was one of those that I went away and read up a lot on and researched on the internet, reading people's theories about how the time travel worked and all that kind of shit. Fascinating film. Absolutely love it.
I think I've said it before, but I can't remember. Didn't it get shelved for a couple of years? I remember they filmed it all, and then 2 or 3 years later, they decided to actually distribute it and get it out there. Yeah, I think it was sat there with no one wanted to pick it up, no one wanted to put it out there. And I remember I had to buy the DVD from America.
Yeah.
And I sat there, and it didn't even come out of the cinema for about 6 months. And then Empire started talking about it, and I'd already seen it. And I was telling everyone, oh, that stupid film with the rabbit on the front. But it really is one of those films that you need to watch 2 or 3 times to really appreciate. And this discussion so far has made me want to go now and watch This Is England, and now I want to go and watch Donnie Darko again, ASAP.
I watched it again a couple of weeks ago, and I, even though I've seen it several times, I always forget that Seth Rogen's in it. He plays like a bully at Jake Gyllenhaal's school, and he's just a bit of a meathead. And then I'll watch it and go, oh yeah, Seth Rogen's in this.
Amazing.
Best thing he's ever done.
It's a great film. As you said, it's the thinker.
Yeah.
You literally sit there when it's ended and just go, Yeah. It takes you about 20, 30 minutes before you can start concentrating on anything other than what you've just witnessed.
Yeah.
It's scary to think the fact that it was shelved for a while as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, if something like Donnie Darko can get shelved, what other great independent stories are out there that haven't been released?
Maybe a prequel to Mac and Me.
Prequel.
Before the aliens arrive, what happened to their planet that means the water's all
Yeah, what was it like back on the planet? A bit more of a backstory.
Becoming Mac. That's what it's called.
Sounds awful. But no, Donnie Darko is a great... I figured that would be in your top
thing. As I said, I tried to stick to films that we hadn't discussed to death, but I could not have that one in.
I mean, my top one is a film we've discussed before as well, Good Will Hunting.
Beautiful film.
Yeah, great choice. I've talked about my love for this film and how good Robin Williams is in it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not necessarily just the performances, it's the actual story itself. The idea that this kid who's been shipped around from foster home to through different people has this select group of friends that he refers to as his brothers, and he's actually a genius, but no one's willing to give him a chance. He works as a janitor at Harvard.
Yeah.
And Stellan Skarsgård as well. He doesn't get enough credit for his performance in this film either.
It's true, actually. Yeah.
This film is kind of has solid performances within it. I remember you actually watched it as a rewatch, didn't you?
I did.
Any scene with kind of Matt Damon and Robin Williams you thought was
superb,
fantastic.
Sublime, yeah.
And it just shows the caliber of acting between the two of them, that there are other great performances within the film that are just completely overshone.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
I might go and watch that again as well. That's another one we talked about After the Death, and it's one of, like, if you didn't have ever seen a film by Robin Williams, you watch that and you're like, that's one of the best actors in the world.
And it's
either that or Patch Adams.
Or Miss Doubtfire.
One of the things I'd be interested in doing is actually taking all the independent films that we've spoken about, looking at the budgets and then how much they made.
Yeah.
I know this film was about $10 million in budget and it made over $200 million.
Wow.
Wow,
I didn't realize it was
mad.
That successful. Christ,
that is mental.
Yeah,
so it'd be interesting to see how everyone else, like all of our independent films, did on that front.
Yeah, we'll come back next time and
Well, we say we always say we'll come back next time and do something, and then we never do.
No. I'm going to finish with a film that isn't in the 80s.
Christ,
happy? It's in 90s, 1994. Kevin Smith, Clerks.
For fuck's sake.
You go on any list out there on the internet and you research best cult.
Wrong
best,
topic.
Best independent movies. You always see Reservoir Dogs. You see Pulp Fiction, and you see Clerks. People, even Tarantino himself, has said it's helped him make some of his films. You can probably see in stuff like Inglourious, the Kevin Smith effect there.
Yeah, very similar.
But he actually made this film on $25,000.
Looks like it.
And it was done by a credit card loan, selling his comic book collection. And then it got picked up by Miramax.
Yeah.
Again, I think it was one of the Weinsteins that did it.
Well, the Weinsteins owned Miramax. So
yeah. So he himself.
Makes it obviously goes along.
Yeah. And Clerks, for me, was one of the first Kevin Smith film I saw that I fell in love with, and that led me to the masterpiece that is Chasing Amy.
Jesus Christ.
It is a funny film. I think you don't really hate it as badly as you say, Clerks.
Well, I haven't seen it. I haven't seen the first one, nor shall I ever. It was bad enough you made me sit through the second one, which was an abomination.
I will always defend him until Tusk, and before, you know, I've got to look back and think.
Red State. Zach and Mary make
a little bit. Well, let's just focus on Clerks right now. Yeah, Clerks is a masterpiece. A lot of filmmakers out there say it is genius how he's done this. It's funny. It gave us Jay and Silent Bob. Dante's fantastic.
You can't blame
Randall's
it for that.
Fantastic.
Another thing that we say we'll do next time, I'm going to actually make sure you do this, bring to me evidence of when any filmmaker has ever said it was genius, because that's the word you just used. If you can find me anything from any director that claims Kevin Smith and Clarks was genius, then I'll eat a shit sandwich.
Okay. Not Wikipedia that you've edited.
No.
An audio recording that I could edit.
No.
Hi, this is Grant Tarantino. It is shit genius. No, it is a genius film. It's very funny. Adam, I know you like Clerks.
I do like Clerks. It's a good film.
It's a very good film. And for me, there is no better independent film out there. He funded it himself. You know, people laughed at him and said it would never do well. It went on to Sundance. It won awards. And I without that, we wouldn't have got Tusk.
You can't blame it for that.
You almost just destroyed your own point at the end there. Brilliant.
Joking aside, it's. I will always say that Kevin Smith's a great filmmaker, and I love it.
Well, you'll continue to be wrong then.
You will continue to be wrong.
We'll have this battle until episode 500.
You said you'd always say it's a good film, but you didn't not too long ago when we did the test.
Yeah.
You then said, actually, no, you're right, I can't defend
it. I think it was 8-3 when we did
the
maths.
But the ones he has done are very good, and for those films that are made well, he was a good filmmaker for making those films.
Gone from genius to good now.
It all hinges on yoga hoses.
That looks like the biggest pile of shite I've ever seen. I'm not happy.
You'll go and see it, though, won't you?
Well, Johnny Depp's
I'm going to America to watch the premiere. Yeah.
Willy Wonka, Johnny Wanker.
Well, anyway, I believe it's Adam's turn for the topic for... Oh, no.
We got anything for the social media?
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, I forgot all
Don't
about
that. Don't forget that great bunch of lads.
Twitter, Jamie Spilsbury, new listener, which is at Dr. Mad Studio. He had three choices, so we'll let him. This is England, Repo Man and Heathers.
Yeah.
Have you seen Heathers?
I've not seen Heathers. I've seen Repo Man. That's a good film.
Cool. Sarah at Lucky Minty. She, again, has put... Heathers, Swingers, and Primer.
Primer, yeah, great film.
I'm not sure, I was just saying he's had three. It was top three, so it's fine. Yeah, I wondered where you're getting that. What am I doing? Movies Made Simple, which is at Movies Simple. Memento.
Yeah.
Wow.
Nearly made my list, actually.
Yeah.
Time Crimes, not seen that.
No.
And Donnie Darko.
Yep.
A Wild Moon Appears, which is at Mousomeness, which is, great choices. The Guest. Which is a great film.
Well, I wouldn't say a great film. It's fun.
I think it's grown on me a lot more, I think, since I've watched it again. Reservoir Dogs and Moon.
Yeah.
At Lawson Akira, Pulp Fiction, Night of the Living Dead and Monsters.
Yeah, the first one, obviously. Yeah.
Which I mean, obviously. At Braunston Nick, Good Will Hunting, High Fidelity and Clerks. Yeah. Kelly... Which is at Kelly P1 Kelly Heathers,
El Mariachi.
Yeah, that's a great film. That's a great film. I got that bought for my birthday.
Do you see how now I've sort of cottoned on to his retardation to the point where he only said one syllable and I knew what he was trying to get.
It's good. I'm liking it. And Warm Bodies. Never seen
not
that.
Not seen that. No.
And we did. The book. Yeah. If you've not listened to our last episode, we had a guest on from Popcorn Heart, Gemma. And she did send us her three, which is good. These are proper, literally tall, skinny, frappuccino, extra hot, one shot. Please, can I have extra foam? Pie, Series 7, The Contenders, and Short Term 12.
Series 7, The Contenders, is one film, and it's a very, very good film as well.
And Short Term 12 is really good as well.
I've not seen that.
Pie.
One. Pie, I didn't like the look of that.
No.
Was that Darren Aronofsky? Like, I think it might have been his first one.
See what I mean? It just sounds starter. I'm never going to watch it. But yeah, thank you for that. Topic next time.
Yeah, so we've spoken quite a bit recently about top three this, top three that film-wise.
Every week. Yeah. It's kind of what we do.
And last time I went with a worst. So I'm going to go with the worst again.
Cool.
With all this talk about The Death of Superman Lives, What Happened, coming out, and us doing a special on it, if you haven't heard, which you can see, it skips the end.co.uk.
Top three plugs?
Everyone, the internet went into uproar recently with Jared Leto as the Joker. People weren't sure. So I want to know your worst three casting choices in a film.
Interesting. Whoa. Oh, I like that a lot, actually.
So people talk about, obviously, Nick Cage as Superman and things like that. So when you watched a film, what films did you think, that's actually not a bad film, but him playing him was dreadful?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
So worst three casting choices.
That's good. I like that. I can think of a few already. I think the hard part is going to be narrowing it down to three, isn't it? Because I can think of quite a few.
And no Kevin Smith films allowed. Because I can see your head going already.
It would just be Jason Mewes three times.
And Silent Bob, as just whichever one he is, I can't remember.
Awful. Leave him alone.
We've been to see Ant-Man, the latest film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, starring Paul Rudd as the titular Ant-Man. Also stars Michael Douglas, stars Evangeline Lilly and Corey Stoll. And I'm going to put it out there. It was a good bit of fun. I really enjoyed it. Adam?
This is what happens, Marvel, when you focus on making this film and not the films in front of it.
Yeah.
You actually get a good film.
Yeah.
You get a fun film. You get what Marvel should be, instead of just going, oh yeah, so here's a slight storyline, but here's three things that are leading up to films in the future.
Yeah, just an advert for the next one. Yeah. Mark, instant thoughts?
Hated it, worst one I've ever seen.
Liar.
No, loved it. It was so nice to go to the cinema and just walk out thinking, I'm glad they got my money.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not moaning, there's not much I can really pick apart. Really enjoyed that. Really, really did. I just want to watch it again now.
Yeah, as did I. And I think, you know, the point you just made there, Adam, is one I was going to make as well. It's self-contained. Yeah. It was a two-hour adventure in and of itself. Of course, they dropped a couple of hints to the wider MCU. At the very start of the film, you see Agent Carter and Howard Stark. Towards the middle of the film, you meet the Falcon. There are little hints here and there, but it's not all about let's set up Civil War. It's about let's enjoy this film for what it is and worry about the rest of the MCU later.
And that's great. It's basically saying, yeah, here's your film. It's self-contained. Oh, yeah, of course, it's in the same universe.
Yeah.
Here's your little nods to the same universe. Mm-hmm. It's not little nods to the storyline of this film, and then the whole point of the film is the major universe.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's great. It was really good fun. Paul Rudd, hilarious.
Absolutely brilliant.
As Scott Lang.
I thought he was great, Paul Rudd.
I don't think I've laughed so much at any sort of Marvel film. For maybe Guardians up there, but apart from that, I was chuckling away loads. Mm-hmm. I thought the humour was really good.
Yeah. And Paul Rudd was exactly the right man to carry that off, because he is just an effortlessly charming, charismatic screen presence. I've always liked Paul Rudd. I like him in everything. He's always effectively pretty much Paul Rudd in everything, but he's one of them that can pull it off because he's good at that. In the same way that Robert Downey Jr. is Robert Downey Jr. in everything. It's a character that I like to see on screen, so I'm happy to watch Paul Rudd, and I think he fit perfectly into that role.
I think the casting generally in this film was, but I thought Michael Douglas as Hank Pym was spot on.
Yeah,
I thought
absolutely brilliant.
Evangeline Lilly as Hope Van Dyne was great.
Yeah, and Corey Stoll as well as the villain. Yeah. I thought he had he was the right. There's always a thin line between sort of being camp and being menacing, and I think he managed to strafe that line quite well and never went too far into one or the other.
Yeah, he reminded me a lot of this whole thing reminded me a lot of the origins of Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
With the whole person within the company.
So he was like the Stane. Enemy
within the company. Yeah, he's very much like Obadiah Stane. But it worked.
Mm.
It was a formula that's worked for them before, and it's worked again. It was a self-contained thing. Iron Man was a self-contained thing. Yes, there are wider nods with post-credit scenes in Iron Man 1, but it was his own film. It was built to stand alone originally.
One of the things you mentioned there, talking about Iron Man, I liked there were a couple of mentions of Iron Man in this film, and I liked how they made it plain that there are parallels between the two, but there are divergences as well. Like Michael Douglas's character, Hank Pym, makes the point that the Ant-Man suit doesn't have weapons, and he basically says something like that the Iron Man suit is a toy or something like that. It's this weaponized, you know, war machine, quite literally, whereas the Ant-Man suit isn't. It's a way of changing the world for the better.
And it's great, but that shows the differences between the route Hank Pym went down and the route Howard Stark went down.
Yeah.
Stark went into more weapons-based manufacture. Mm-hmm. Pym went into science.
Yeah.
Of course, in the wider MCU, it's not the case, but in the comics, we find out that Pym actually creates Ultron.
Yeah.
Which I don't know why they haven't included that in this universe.
Unless they specifically wanted this, so you had scientists on divergent paths. Maybe. Rather than all leading towards the destruction of Earth as they tend to in the comics.
Yeah, that's true.
I love the fact as well, I've not researched too much into this. I've seen the trailers, but I haven't read any of the reviews or spoilers. I love the fact that they carried on and left it with Edgar Wright's story, his script. Worked really well. You could tell it was Edgar Wright. You could just get that feel for it. He left a bit of a... I was always sitting there thinking, what would Edgar Wright be doing at this scene? What would you think it would look like? But hats off to the director. He's done a fantastic job, and there's no bitterness for me. I'm like, well, okay, it's a shame he walked away, but this other director's done a fantastic job.
And it's clear that Adam McKay and Paul Rudd, who obviously took the script and kind of have only just kind of tidied it up a bit and maybe added in a few bit more wider MCU stuff into there as well. But from the sounds of it, they have kept the script generally the same.
I think from what I can gather, the few more broader type jokes are the ones that McKay and Rudd brought to it. The more sort of nuanced stuff is what was there already. Like there's a bit where they're in a briefcase and they hit Siri on the iPhone, and the iPhone starts playing a song by The Cure or something like that.
It says, I'm going to disintegrate you, and it starts playing Disintegrate by
The Cure. And I'm thinking that's pure Edgar Wright and Joe Cornish. They've clearly written that joke. That was them all over. I agree. I think Peyton Reed, the director, did a perfectly acceptable job with the film. Not too flashy. I thought a lot of the stuff when they were smaller scale, when Ant-Man shrinks and he's with the ants and all that, looked fantastic. Yeah. So I think he did a good job. The only point where I thought I'd like to have seen what Wright did with this was there's a scene where Scott Ant-Man shrinks so small that he's subatomic and he goes into the quantum realm.
Yeah.
And the way that that's visualized on screen was very cool. But I sat there thinking, I'd love to know what Edgar Wright would have done with the quantum realm. I think that's where he would have excelled.
Yeah.
We'll never know.
We'll never know.
It sucks.
Yeah.
But fair play, like you said, visually, I loved it.
Yeah.
Some of the best CGI I've seen again.
Mm.
No ropey on this. And, you know, the last Marvel I did see, Avengers, we picked it apart and said at times it looked dodgy.
Yeah.
This wasn't the same sort of budget as Avengers 2, and the animation was flawless.
Yeah, it was
like
great.
You said, when he kept shrinking, it was a lot better than Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. It was, wasn't it? It was a lot better.
Well, yeah.
Just.
Mainly because it's 30 years since, and technology's
moved on. It's a close one. But I loved it.
Can we get that on a laptop? Can we get side by side?
Yeah, frame by frame breakdown.
Just to make sure.
But, you know, like you were saying, when he actually kind of ants down, goes back up, he was doing it throughout the film a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And in one scene, he'd do it two or three times to demonstrate. It was flawless.
Yeah.
It was so well done.
I love the fact Mark's just used ants down.
And I think that should be now the official term for when he reduces. We call it ants down.
What are you doing?
Down.
I'm ant downing. But it was spectacular and I loved it. And I loved the scale of everything. And it looked so good. Because obviously, it's never easy and it can look crap. And I'm going to say it, you know, Honey, I Shrunk the Kid, at times you knew it wasn't real, a dog that big.
Yeah.
But in this, you know, the other ants look fantastic.
Yeah.
I loved it.
If you looked really closely during Honey, I Shrunk the Kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, if you get the 4K Blu-ray now, you can notice it a bit. It's a bit ropey.
Did anyone else feel a pang of sadness when Anthony died, which was basically Paul Rudd's favourite ant? Little winged ant. Yeah. And then you see one of his little wings fall to the ground. I was like, oh.
Spoilers.
Yeah.
And one of the things
as if our reviews are not entirely spoiler filled always.
It's one thing when you look at it, you realise that Marvel do origins very well on screen. It's always the difficult second film for Marvel.
So Ant-Man 2. We're already worried, are we?
I mean, if we look at the track run so far, we've seen Iron Man 2.
Not great.
Thor Dark World.
I like that. Not as good as the first one.
It was okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then Cap 2 was great.
Yeah.
True.
So it seems like they're getting better. So I'm hoping Ant-Man 2 is the, although from the looks of the post-credit scenes, he's going to be appearing in Civil War.
Yes, he looks like he's going to be appearing in Civil War. Another post-credits, it looks like that Evangeline Lilly, Hope Van Dyne, is going to become the Wasp, which would be great. I mean, there needs to be more female superheroes in the MCU.
And the Wasp is kick-ass.
Yeah, big time. I was really glad, actually, that Michael Douglas had such a big role in this. I just assumed that Hank Pym's role would be to pass the mantle on to Scott Lang and then he'd piss off. But he's a lead character. I thought it would be basically a glorified cameo, but it's not. He's in the whole film and he's great as well.
And obviously, sadly, he had cancer, didn't he? And I didn't realise that he had got so much better and so kind of fitter in such a short time. Mm-hmm. He looked really well. He was a great, he's put on weight again, and he just looked really good. Because obviously all you ever see is pictures in the press of how bad he looks and like a frail, dying old man. But fair play, it's great to see him back on the screen.
It is.
And it made me realise how much I miss Michael Douglas in the cinema,
he's a great
actor. So good.
He is. And speaking of him looking good, the opening scene that's set in, I think it was 1989, at the Triskelion when they'd first built it, and you see a younger version of him where they've basically used the same technology they used in Terminator Genesis to make Arnie look young. They've basically stripped 20 years from Michael Douglas, and it was flawless.
It was.
It looked like him from Wall Street. It was absolutely
flawless. It was really
flawless.
Well. I was there going, wow.
Yeah.
Unlike, as you've mentioned before, we've got to say it, Tron. Biggest pile of shit ever that's done that. But, you know, it was really, really good.
Mm.
It's a very cool film overall.
It worked on all levels. The stakes of the drama were there, the comedy was there, the acting was great, the casting was brilliant, it was well directed. I can't really fault it.
No, I can't.
I thoroughly enjoyed it.
And it's the most fun I've had at the cinema all year.
This summer, certainly for me, yeah. I mean, we've discussed already, this summer's been a colossal disappointment. This is my favourite film of the summer so far.
Yeah, it's going to take some beating as well. When you look at what's left, apart from Star Wars at the end of the year, it's going to be up there as my top three, I reckon.
Fantastic Four coming up next.
Fantastic Four, which I'm still on the fence about. I'm curious.
I've taken the same route with Ant-Man, because I've said to you with Ant-Man, when it first trailer hit, I wasn't that impressed.
Mm-hmm.
The more we've seen of it, the better it's looked. Same with the Fantastic Four.
Yes, true.
But Ant-Man really kind of lived up to the expectations I had by the end of it.
Speaking of the Ant-Man trailer, one of the big laughs from the trailer is when you see him on the Thomas the Tank Engine train and then it goes off the rails. And that was a big laugh. But it was another one of those where I kind of wish it hadn't been in the trailer.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that would have been a huge laugh if you'd only seen
cinema.
It in the film.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that was a bit of a waste to give that away soon.
It really is one of those films that I've been thinking about since we've seen it, and I just want to go back and watch it again. Mm-hmm. It was so much fun. It didn't feel like 2 hours.
No.
And like you said, if you've got a list, you want to be entertained, you want good special effects, good casting, good acting as well. Mm-hmm. I did slightly worry about Paul Rudd. I don't know why, because I thought he's the guy from 40-Year-Old Virgin. He's the funny guy.
Yeah.
Will he be able to pull off this big super blockbuster summer block? Because it is a big jump for him.
Yeah.
He was one of the only things I wasn't worried about, just because I think if he'd been cast as a Hank Pym Ant-Man, I'd have been annoyed.
Well, as if he was supposed to be like the scientist. Yeah.
But the fact they cast him as the Scott Lang
version. He's so likable. Yeah. But my I suppose my big concern was that this elevates him even higher now and we can't get him in Mac and Me Too.
Yeah.
That's what you've got to think about. Because now everyone's going to want him.
I don't think he'll get involved in that. I think
he will.
Passion projects, isn't it?
That's true. Yeah, it's close to his heart, Mac and Me.
I love that he's been plugging it as well. I'm going to mention it now, but he's been plugging it now for
Mac and Me 1, that is. Not Mac
and Me 2. That's right, yeah. Yeah, he's on Conan O'Brien again.
Yeah, still unsure he knows our script exists.
He knows.
He knows. We'll get it into his hand one of these days. Evangeline Lilly as well. I love her because I'm a huge fan of
Kate.
Lost. She's Kate from Lost. And she's not in enough. I think she's quite picky with what she does. She doesn't. She's not in. You don't see her in a lot of shit films. You only see her probably once every couple of years in a film.
Yeah.
So it's really nice to see her working because she's really, really good. She's really talented. She's great in this.
She's stunning as well.
Yeah.
One of the wonderful things about Marvel films is, of course, she'd have gone into this, been offered the role of Hope Van Dyne, potentially turning into the Wasp, and then have said, here's a 5-film deal.
Yeah. Which is funny because I remember reading an interview with her after she finished Lost, and she'd been offered other TV shows, and she said, you know, I just did 6-7 years on one. I don't want to commit to anything long term, and that's the reason why she doesn't do many films. So it's a surprise to me that she will have locked herself into one of these ironclad Marvel multi-picture contracts. So it's surprising me that she's going down that route, but I'm glad she has. It's just, the MCU is better for having her in it.
Just nice to have the work, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm just imagining her and Scarlett Johansson together in a film. Jesus.
Yeah, but it wasn't a Marvel film you were thinking of, though, was it?
Degrading.
No, that's his fault. I was just thinking of them, you know, just fighting it out. Scissoring.
Ruined.
I'd like to see her ruined.
Christ.
But no, she's stunning. And she's great in this. And like you said.
Yeah, her acting is brilliant. Yeah,
her acting is stunning.
That's correct. What I mean.
Yes.
Yeah.
Christ, we need to get Gemma on again, I think.
Yeah.
She does help. But anyway, yeah, it's just so relieving that we've gone to see this and not all been disappointed. We have been.
Yeah.
A few times this year already. Yeah. And, you know, we loved Terminator last week. It was good fun, but it still didn't... We weren't all coming back going, "Way!" No.
Terminator was good fun.
Jurassic World was a letdown.
Jurassic World was a letdown. Fast and Furious 7 was good fun, and Mad Max was very good, but I still think this is my favourite thing I've seen this year. Are we about ready to score it, do we think?
I think so.
Yeah.
Shall I start the ball rolling?
Go on.
I'm going to go 8.
Yeah.
I was thinking 8. I'm quite happy with that. I think I'll go 8 as well. I think it was good fun. Like you mentioned, we've had a lot of disappointments so far this year.
Yeah.
And this kind of really surprised me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know what? 8.
Awesome.
Good work, lad.
Yeah.
8 out of 10.
Big score for a small film.
You were praying that we were all going to give it a good score just so you could say that.
I could have said small score for a small film. But
that's true. Yeah.
Well done, Ant-Man. 8 out of 10. And as we just said, next time we're going to be going to see Fantastic Four.
Hopefully it doesn't score a 4.
No.
Oh, he's on it today. All the gags.
Chaps, I think on the last episode I said we had a special guest on the podcast this week.
I think you did, yeah.
Not Gemma, not another Make-A-Wish. Do you remember the film Ted?
Yes, I do.
Ted 2's out now.
Is it?
We've got Mark Wahlberg.
And it's supposed to be absolutely hilarious. So I've actually got Ted here today.
The Ted?
The Ted from Universal. They sent him across.
Yeah.
Here he is. Say hello, Ted.
Hang on, I got to post this. Hashtag.
Oh, well, that's not really a hello, but he's here, as you can see.
He's too busy tweeting.
I know, you know what these people are like now on social media. So I thought we could just do a little quick Q&A. Yeah. He hasn't got long. He's got to go because he's thinking he's going to make Ted free, probably.
Yeah.
Any questions you got for him, lads?
So, Ted, how have you been?
We could totally be lawyers.
Totally be lawyers.
Doesn't really answer my question, but thank you.
He's a bit under the influence.
I think he wants to be a lawyer with you, but how was filming with Mila Kunis?
That felt smooth. That felt really smooth.
Oh,
I can appreciate that. Yeah. I imagine it would feel pretty smooth, yeah.
I'd like to find out if it's smooth.
So what do you think about the finished product? Did you enjoy the film?
Wow, you make history come alive.
Yeah?
Well, that's one way of putting it, certainly.
That's
a
huge statement. Have you ever thought about starring in Mac and Me 2?
Well, yeah, but that was back when she was... and before she was...
Mac.
I mean, Mac's actually a fella. At least we believe so. We've not seen his genitals.
True.
That's the point. I don't think he's got a knob.
Yeah. Mark Wahlberg, fan?
We don't know any lawyers. All our friends make sandwiches.
He's getting caught up on the lawyer thing again.
He's obsessed with this law.
Yeah. Maybe there's his lawyers have said he can't talk about Mark Wahlberg.
Are you in trouble?
I'm going to get a huge migraine in the parking lot in about 20 minutes.
Oh, it's all making sense now.
Yeah.
Ted, is there anything you can tell us about this kind of lawyer thing?
Hang on, I got to post this. Hashtag.
Again, he's on Twitter.
He's plugging Twitter too much. I'm not liking this.
Is he in Ted 2 or is he in Still Alice? Because I'm pretty sure he's already said that.
What are you in?
We could totally be lawyers.
No, he's lost it.
We're not having this. I'll tell you what, Ted. You've been really good to us today, but I don't want you staying here.
No.
Should we get him in a box and send him away?
Yeah. Do you know what? Let's give him away.
I don't think
Universe is going to be very happy because I said we would return him.
No.
Look at the size of him. He's bigger than Warwick Davis. He is, isn't he? He might be.
I don't know.
And he's dressed as
Flash Gordon.
Yeah. It is awesome. It's very fluffy.
We'll get a picture of him up on the Instagram and Twitter. Yeah.
Do you know what? Let's give him away.
Go on then.
Thanks to Universal. You can have him. What should we ask?
How about this? Who is the writer and director of Ted 2?
Do you know that, Ted?
That felt smooth. That felt really smooth.
What are you doing to him, Mark?
Not the correct answer.
So let us know on Twitter at STTE Podcast. We'll also put it up on Facebook / Skip to the End Podcast. And we'll even put it on Instagram somehow. Mm-hmm. We'll put a picture of him in the question.
Yeah.
Let us know and you can have Ted in a couple of weeks' time and we'll announce it on the next episode.
Lovely stuff.
Ted, thanks for coming. Any last things to say?
Wow, you make history come alive.
I keep boring the shit out of me now.
Cheers, Ted.
The rewatch this time round is cult classic. I mean, can you even use the word classic?
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Cult classic, Troll 2. Oh, good God. Now, this film is about a family who go to a village called Nilbog.
Yeah.
Which for you smart listeners will realise is goblin backwards.
Oh, wow.
The family. Yeah. Oh, you didn't realise
that.
Yeah. Sorry, spoilers. So the reason why the family go out there is they're doing a home exchange. So there's this weird family who are going to move to their house or some shit, and they're going to live in their house. There's a mum, a dad, a son and a daughter, and a dead granddad, and they and they interact with various trolls. Now, before we get into our rewatch, lads, we were lucky enough to have a very brief chat with a gentleman called George Hardy, who plays the father of the family in Troll 2. So here's George.
Thank you for taking the time to join us today.
Sure, okay, yes.
So the first question we have for you, how was it then being involved in such a great film as Troll 2?
Well, have you seen the documentary Best Worst Movie yet?
We have. We had a group viewing of it recently.
Oh, great, great, great. Yeah. No, I mean, it was you know, it was terrific. I mean, now it's impacted my life tremendously. I mean, I just got back from doing a film in Germany called Goblin 2. And, you know, it's all because of Troll 2 that I ended up in a film in Germany just recently this summer. And it's taken me all over the world. I've been into Dubai, to Abu Dhabi, to New York University to show Troll 2. I mean, it's really taken me all over the world because it's just been such a cult phenomenon. And now I'm interviewing with you guys, you know. So little did I know the little film that I was in, with the little train wreck that it was, has become, you know, world cult status. You know, it's just a little movie that you know, just people just adore.
What do you think it is about Troll 2 that people have got such a kind of obsession with that it has made that cult following list?
You know, it's kind of ripens like a bottle of wine to me. Like a you know, the older it gets, the better it gets. It's just so unusual, and it's just such an art film. And, you know, I watched it again the other day with my daughter and some of her friends that had never seen it. And it was, you know, I've got an ultra high definition TV now, and I watched it in all its clarity, and I was really able to, you know, study the film on such a beautiful screen. And the sound system was just terrific in the house. And you know, you really could get a nice study on the film and all its color and just the way it was put together. I just don't know. It's just this magical ingredient for people that have never seen Troll 2. It's just when you watch it for the first time, it's almost like a religious experience, or it's like it's life-changing for some, because, you know, for the ones that add a lot of humor to watching film and that are people that adore art film. And it's just so unusual. The lines in it in the movie, you just go, where did that come from? How did that happen? What were they thinking when they wrote the film? How did that scene come about? How did the next scene come about? You just wonder. And either you fall in love with the film or you turn it off kind of thing. But for the most part, I think people today are looking for something different in film, and it's definitely that. It's just such an unusual film for many to see it. So it's just not your run-of-the-mill, you know, big-budget film that people get tired of seeing. I think people just are so desensitized by that these days that they're looking for something simple in nature to adore them, and I think that's what Troll 2 does.
Watching the documentary back, it looks like the director wasn't the easiest chap to work with.
Well, actually, he's a very close friend of mine now, he and Rosella both. He's truly an artist, and Rosella, I think, is brilliant in the way she puts together things in story, and he can make it really fun and exciting on film with that art flair. So I totally admire the couple, and I think there was just this miscommunication years back, of which now, which is nice, both Claudio and Rosella understand and speak English much better than 20 years ago. And they've done several films in the United States since, and several in English. So their English has improved. And so now when I do communicate with them, it's a lot better, especially with Google Translate as well, especially with Rosella. going back and forth on Messenger. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
So my final question today, you've just been working on Goblin 2. I believe, was that in Germany?
Yeah, it was in Baden-Baden. A fellow named Eric Hortz and his partner Alex, the three guys together wrote a script in Germany, and it's an independent film, art, kind of an art film that they've put together. And they've used a lot of references from Troll 2, as they're huge fans there. And so they asked me to come over and actually played Michael Waitz from Troll 2 in Goblin 2. So I'm admonishing the town that goblins still exist. I know, because my wife was killed by goblins 25 years ago, and you know, in reference to what happened to my wife in Troll 2. So it's really going to be a fun film, and it was fantastic working with some well-known actors in Germany, and I just had a marvelous time with a group of people over there. So yeah.
Well, thank you very much, George, for your time today, and obviously we're really looking forward to seeing Goblin 2 and getting to see that character again after 25 years. So thank you very much for your time today.
So thanks a lot there to George Hardy for joining us. He was a fun chap, wasn't he?
Yeah, and it's really good he took the time out from making Goblin 2 to speak to us.
Yeah, and also took time out from his busy dentist practice in Alabama, because he is actually genuinely a practicing dentist and was at the time of starring in this film 25 years ago.
Fair play.
Yeah.
Good on him.
So the film, ye gods, who wants to venture their
opinion?
Before
we start, I just want to make a point. In the introduction there to the film, Ben mentioned that they interact with various trolls. They don't. Trolls and goblins are different things.
This is true.
You know, skip to the end here. We're very equality awareness here at Skip to the End.
Yeah.
We don't think that all trolls look like goblins.
So what's a dwarf?
A dwarf is someone with an actual medical condition. About the size of Ted.
Apparently.
Slightly bigger.
Yeah, you're right, because this film wasn't, when it was written by these two apparently insane Italians, it was not written to be a sequel to Troll. It was written as a film called Goblins, and it is about these horrible, evil little goblins. But then the producers said, no, let's piggyback on this moderately successful first Troll film from like 1984 or something.
Despite having no similarities whatsoever.
No similarities, no connections, nothing whatsoever. And they called it Troll 2 and threw it out there. Despite the fact that it doesn't feature any trolls, as you say, it features goblins. They're referred to in the film as goblins. They didn't even, you know, get one person to shoehorn the word troll in once.
Nope.
No. So yeah, you're right. They didn't interact with a variety of trolls. They interacted with a variety of goblins.
There we go.
So you're just going off there, Adam, making the point, and that's a very well point made there. I think, you know, if listeners out there have watched this and didn't quite grasp they weren't trolls, now you know. But what's your actual thoughts on the film? Did you enjoy it? Would you?
Yeah, I thought it was a masterpiece.
Yeah?
Honestly, yeah, I thought there was some top-notch acting. The story is just one of the greatestly conceived stories ever told, I feel.
Yeah.
I mean, we learn quite early on that the dad of the family has always wanted to be a farmer.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Never quite got there.
No.
So then when this opportunity, seemingly too good to be true, opportunity comes up in which he can do some sort of family swap.
You
invite a load of strangers to come and live in your home with all your possessions, despite the fact you're a moderately wealthy family who has quite a lot of expensive things. You can go and live on their farm, in their farmhouse, and they can come and live with all your expensive stuff in the city.
Normal.
Yeah, I think everyone in the city would jump at that chance.
Big time.
Especially if you want to be a farmer for ages. Thinks nothing of his family or kids at this stage. You know, they've all got friends, they've all got stuff to do. But now he's going to move them out there for 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
Goes to this Nil Bog, which, as Ben pointed out, we cleverly find out is goblin backwards. Because, if you are going to be a group of goblins that hunt people, you definitely make sure that your town that you do that in is goblin backwards and doesn't give any hints away.
It was originally called Goblinton, but someone said it's a bit too on the nose, so they called it Nilborg.
Oh, I like Nilborg. Definitely. It's a good name. I almost thought a band, punk band, Nilborg. It does sound like a band, doesn't it? Nilborg Tonight.
I know there's some interesting twists and turns, and I think it's a very, very good film.
Cool.
Now tell us what you really think, Adam.
Dreadful.
Yeah.
The worst thing I've ever seen. I think I've actually had poo on a toilet that is better than this.
Poo on a toilet?
On a toilet, so you put the lid down and look at it and analyse it.
Up a decker.
I literally poo on a toilet has been better than this.
It's shit, isn't it? In recent years, it's become this big cult film, much like The Room. We're going down the Room rabbit hole again. But with The Room, I can at least see the camp value because it's very funny. It's so bad and inept that it's funny because The Room was made by a guy who had too much money and just wanted to make a film, even though he didn't know what he was doing. This is made by professional filmmakers. The Italian director and writer and the Italian crew, they're professionals. So this is inept in a different way. It's like, you should be better than this. Mm-hmm. I can't find humour in this. It's not camp funny like The Room is. It's just bad. I hated it. I was so annoyed by the end of it. It was just pissing me off.
I don't agree.
Of course you don't. Fucks.
I liked it. So for me, I liked the score. I think the sound was incredible. And I did a bit of research and found out it was done on an 80s Casio keyboard.
Yeah.
So it's up there with kind of, I'd like to say, you know, John Williams, that sort of sound. You know, if you're listening, you can easily associate it with those sort of things.
I think he actually did the score for it, yeah.
Yeah. It's quite John Carpenter. The masks were brilliant.
No.
They looked great.
Awful.
And I thought they were really, really harrowing. And the only thing I did wanted to say is that, you know, when I think it was George's character punched one of them in the face.
Yeah.
It looked amazing. I really wish I could punch one in the face because it looked so satisfying. You know, when you punch a goblin in the face. I'm not going to like, I'm never going to get to do this, but it looks so enjoyable. I'm not going to like see some midget in the street and just punch him in Nuneaton. But no, I just, do you know what I mean? It just looks so rewarding.
I don't know what you're on about.
Okay. The special effects were good.
No.
I loved it. It looked, you know, all the green sort of disgusting blood stuff is dripping from the boy.
Yeah.
That looked brilliant. It didn't look just like slime or anything. It looked really real. I
mean, you always love it when you see a boy covered in slime.
Can I just make a point here? The director and writer of this whole mess, what have they got against vegetarians?
Well, now there's a documentary about this film called Best Worst Movie, which is infinitely better than the film itself. Mark and I have both seen it. And in that film, there's a bit where the writer, who is the director's wife, she mentions that a lot of her friends at one time in the late 80s all of a sudden became vegetarians, and it pissed her off. So she decided
to... So actually is a dig at vegetarians.
It absolutely is, yeah. So she decided to write a screed against vegetarians. So the trolls in this film, for those of you who haven't seen
goblins.
It... Sorry, goblins. They are all vegetarians. So what they do is they feed humans this green mush, which turns them into vegetables so that the goblins can then eat them.
Because there's actually a scene where they talk about, the preacher, who isn't in goblin form, for some reason he's in a human form, because in this town where you're monitoring everything and everyone, naturally you make sure that this kid can't see everything that's going on, but he does anyway.
Yeah.
So naturally they stay in disguise. Starts about meat, and he starts saying how disgusting meat is and flesh. Fuck is going on.
Yeah, it is anti-vegetarian.
And then a skateboard falls somewhere, and the kid gets found, and they try and force feed him ice cream. It's shit. I've literally lost any energy.
That's the will to live.
Yeah.
See, I thought this would be up your street because you bloody hate vegetables, don't you, Adam?
I do. I absolutely
hate it. I've seen you send food back because there was a bit of broccoli on the side of your plate.
I'm not having it.
It's green.
And
it's
not even about the vegetables. If I order it a certain way and it doesn't come that certain way, send it back.
I send it back.
Guys, can you get back to the film here? You know,
I'm sorry, but are you saying you're different? If you order something in a pub or restaurant,
it depends. I mean, if it's wildly different, send it back. But if you know, if there's a little bit of broccoli on my plate or something, or a little bit of lettuce, I'll let it go.
That shocks me because you are one of the most annoyed people I've ever met about everything.
I know, but I'm also lazy, and I don't want to then have to wait 20 minutes for another round of my food to come back.
I wouldn't say you're fully lazy.
Lads, we're talking Troll 2 here. You're not giving it the time all day.
Well, I think this conversation is evidence of what we think about this fucking film.
I know.
Isn't it?
It's like we're talking about ordering food.
Christ.
Troll 2 is fantastic.
It really isn't.
I loved it.
You've gone wrong.
I genuinely do. It's crappy made, silly, stupid horror.
The thing that really annoys about this is he's going to give it an 8.
He will do.
No, more. Do you know this film, I was only actually going to take the piss and say I can't believe it was that long, was done and everything in 3 weeks.
Yep.
That's amazing.
Is it?
And what pissed
me
off...
The evidence of it is on screen.
And what pissed me off is it was 0% on Rotten Tomatoes for about 4 years.
Yeah,
that
six
pisses
now,
me
isn't
off.
It? Yeah.
I've been on there making fake accounts, giving it 10. I'm just doing my best.
They won't count though, according to Uwe.
Oh, yeah.
Uwe Boll says that... These sites, IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes, are weighted against auteurs like him. So you can vote as highly as you want. They'll never count. If you want to know more about that, go and listen to our Uwe Boll special on Podomatic.
People have actually fed back saying that they didn't like him. They listened to it and now they like him.
Yeah.
So we're changing people's opinions.
He's a nice guy.
Good dude.
So should we talk about Uwe for a bit? Or
just anything so we don't have to talk about Troll 2.
Talk about Troll 1.
Genuinely, I think you made a point there about best worst film ever.
Best worst film?
Yep. That is a very good documentary. Mm-hmm. Very big insight to the cult following of this film and how much George has gone out there and off his own bat promoted all over the world.
Yeah.
I think we even see one of the Comic-Cons in Birmingham or London here.
Yeah, it was Birmingham.
Amazing.
Well, that's interesting. It's interesting that he's gone out and done that.
Yeah. There's a massive... He's literally like up there with like Tommy Wiseau. People see him as a god and make him do the line in, you know, half sold out cinemas. Mm. They do. Yeah. It's a really, really good documentary.
The documentary is written and directed by the chap whose name I forget, but he played the little lad of the family. He directed the documentary, yeah. So it's him and the dad, George, going out around the country, going off to all these conventions. I actually thought he was one of the best things in it, which is, you know, it's a relative scale. That doesn't mean he was good, but I think he was better than the rest. Yeah. The worst one for me was the mum.
Oh, my God.
She was a space case. And then in the documentary, you meet the woman who played the mum, and her first name is Margot in real life, and she ain't all there, is she?
No, and they really struggle to get hold of her. She's like the last sort of piece to the jigsaw, and when they do find her, she doesn't really want to let them in or anything.
They doorstep her. They literally turn up on her doorstep like the Daz Challenge and harass her until they let them in, and she's there looking after her virtually dead mum, who's clearly like 95.
That's horrendous. With
these talon-like nails, and they sort of force her to recreate one of the scenes. It's all very, very weird.
Why would you do that to someone?
Don't know.
Awful.
Entertainment.
More bad that this film has done.
One of the things about this film, as I say, it's not camp like The Room. You can't enjoy it in the same way. But there's a scene in this where one of the teenage boys is getting seduced by like the goblin queen. And she seduces him with some corn on the cob. She's literally using the corn on the cob like a sexual device, rubbing it up and down her thigh. And then she starts getting it on with this lad. And then it starts popping into popcorn and the kid sort of drowns in popcorn.
It was insane.
That was funny. That bit I laughed at because it's so mental.
Did you think she was going to... With the cob?
No.
You said she was rubbing it up and down her leg. Did you think she was actually going to...
No. Well, insert it into her vagina in a, you know, family film. Did I think she was going to do that?
It's not a family film. This is not a family film. You don't sit down with your kids.
What rating does it have?
I've no idea.
I don't know.
S for shit.
You? Unwatchable?
Yeah.
Another thing in the film that was bizarre that they talk about in the documentary is, you know, the scene where one of the teenagers goes into the local store to buy some milk, and there's that weird guy behind the counter. He's like, oh, we've only got
he's actually a mental patient.
He's no fooling mental. Yeah. And he was out on like day release, and then he just got a part in this film. And he said in this documentary that he wasn't acting. He was genuinely very disturbed. He was the best thing in the film as well. He looked really committed to the role.
I think that was it. It was such an authentic performance.
It was, yeah.
They're reaching out to the community. They're giving people second chances. I love it.
Yeah, doing their bit, yeah.
Couldn't you? Just carry on.
So, yeah, we went out to social media again.
Mm-hmm.
People aren't happy. Some people contact us, where can I watch this? Do you want to hear what some of the people said?
No.
I'm not happy about this. Extended Cooper, it's when the biggest twist in the town is Goblin spelled backwards, you know you're in for... What's the guy who did Sixth Sense?
M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah, sort of his-esque magic, which is good. But Mr. Franco has actually put he wants to gouge his eyes out.
Yeah.
And actually put he genuinely can't think of anything positive to say. It's a shame.
No, it feels.
John Brooks got it right this week. He said he'll give you three words to sum up this film. Why make it?
Yep.
Yep.
And Holly Payne, good friend of the podcast,
yeah,
has put, the picture we used on Twitter, this was my cover picture for a long time. I love it, and I absolutely love that film.
Oh, Holly.
So no one liked it.
No.
And I wish they had.
And just to wrap it up, one of my favourite quotes was from the insane Italian director.
What were you gonna say?
The insane Italian director was talking about how people didn't appreciate it at its time. And it wasn't the director, it was the editor who said that people didn't appreciate this film at the time, but now they're more attuned to it because of films like Harry Potter. And he basically said that without Troll 2, there would never have been Harry Potter.
So there you go.
Delusional.
There's your evidence.
JK, you gotta be grateful.
Mm-hmm. Delusional.
That's how you made your billion.
Delusional.
So whose pick is it for the next rewatch? Ooh.
So
what's
guys,
it going to be?
We're not rating it yet.
No. Oh, God.
Shouldn't have to.
You go first, Ben.
Oh, God. Oh, what did I give The Room?
No. Mark, you go first.
All right. 8.
Fuck off. Be real.
Okay, 5.
Even that's...
No, I'm going to give it a 5. It was my sort of horror... Okay, 4. 4's about right. Eight silly.
Well, I've got a feeling Adam's going to give it the old duck egg. I'm going to give it one for the popcorn scene.
I'm giving it one.
One, one, it, four, six.
Not as bad two. As not as bad as some of the things I've seen.
Not as bad as Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So two. That's not bad for the recent weeks.
Yeah. I think that's about what we gave The Room, wasn't it?
Yeah. I like The Room more than I've seen it.
Oh, significantly, yeah.
And I can see why people enjoy this film as a cult. It's like going to a cinema mm-hmm. with a load of other people who've watched, seen it. I can see why that would be enjoyable for people. Yeah.
You're just never going to do it.
No.
It's my turn, guys.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to save us a little bit now. We've had a few weeks of shit. Adam, I can see by your face, you haven't enjoyed Troll 2. We've had The Room, we've had Batman and Robin. It's getting a bit painful.
Yeah.
Do you both agree you want a bit of a, come
yeah,
on, this is
even thinking about Troll 2 even more is making me yawn.
There you go. So let's get rid of these crap films now. Let's focus on a classic.
Okay.
Okay, so...
Clerks.
No, we're not going to do that. I know you guys aren't always into the horror genre, but I want to try and relight that fire a little bit, especially for you, Ben.
Relight my fire.
Nice. Recently, we had the death of Christopher Lee, which is very sad.
Yeah.
So I would like to respect his work by revisiting The Wicker Man.
Oh, okay.
With Nicolas Cage.
Pointless.
So we're going to do the remake of The Wicker Man.
Oh, God. How'd it get burned?
With Nicolas Cage. Yeah, for the next episode. So is that good?
Shouldn't have to.
Christ.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
It's that time again. It's time to skip back in time.
Skip back.
2005.
Skip back.
Definitely going to get sued. Can't do that. 2005, another great year.
Yeah.
I can't believe we're here already.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
To think that we've now done 10 years of this feature.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not literally taking us 10
years. 4 months, but yeah. It's been good.
Adam, 2005, hit me.
This was very difficult to narrow down. I think I ended up with four choices. So I've ruled three out purely because of what came afterwards, Batman Begins.
Nice.
Good choice.
It was the rebooting of the Batman franchise after it was killed by Joel Schumacher.
Yeah.
And Nolan took it. And it must have taken a lot to convince Warner Brothers to hand a director like Nolan the reins to Batman, one of the most profitable franchises of all time. But they said, they must have liked what he was doing. He brought in Christian Bale as Batman, Michael Caine as Alfred. And then we got Liam Neeson as Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah.
And it just worked.
It did. And like you say, for them to want to give him the keys to a franchise, especially because he was this indie auteur, and it wasn't just throwing him in the middle of the franchise, it was saying, we need to restart this.
Yeah.
This is a huge franchise, people love it worldwide, and it's a cash cow. We trust you to reboot it. And he nailed it.
And they must have said, what is your plan? And he must have pitched them the idea of the Dark Knight trilogy.
Yeah.
And go with it. It's yours. A Batman grounded in more realistic Earth. Not this overly flamboyant Batman and Robin, Batman Forever that we've seen.
Yeah.
Not the dark, dreary, gothic Tim Burton Batmans that we've seen. Although Batman Returns is still one of the best Batman films of all time.
Stop plugging your own films.
Jesus.
Typical.
to actually reboot a franchise in the way he did as well. I mean, how many times have we seen Batman's origin story?
Dozens in various forms of media.
It bores you to death by now. But he brought a new take to it. It was very interesting. Obviously, he actually focused on the fact that Bruce went back to try and kill the man that had killed his parents and realised that wasn't the right path to go down. And is trained by the League of Shadows.
It was very, very cool.
So it had to be that for me. Rebooting a franchise like Batman's never going to be easy.
And while we're on this, topic, since our last episode, the latest trailer has arrived for Batman versus Superman. So, what are our thoughts on that, lads?
I'm really starting to get excited, and I hated Man of Steel, so I'm starting to think, this could be good. I'm not getting too excited that I'm going to get pissed on, but I'm starting to get a little bit. I like that trailer.
I think it's interesting that people hate Man of Steel because. It's now more than ever, we should be seeing it as a smaller cog in a bigger machine.
Yeah.
I think that this film is going to retroactively make Man of Steel a better film in comparison, because I mean, we've seen already the comparisons between General Zod tearing that building apart with his heat vision.
Yeah.
And in the trailer, we see Bruce Wayne looking at that happen to Wayne Tower.
Yeah. It's very smart, and I agree, and I think it will retroactively make us enjoy the first one more. But going back to our Ant-Man conversation, that's not how it should work.
No, yeah,
everything should
no.
be self-contained and enjoyable on its own merits. But I'd love to know whether that was Zack Snyder's plan all along. His plan was, at the end of the film, Superman was going to look a dick because he's destroyed the city, and then in the second film we'll deal with the aftermath. Or whether the plot for the second film has come from the kickback he had from the fans and the critics saying, this is irresponsible the way this first film's ended.
Yeah.
I'd love to know whether it was always the plan or not. But I'm thoroughly excited. I thought the trailer was great. I think Ben Affleck looks great. I think he's going to kill it as Batman.
So
I really do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
With Snyder, it wouldn't surprise me if it was his plan all along.
He's a bit of a twisted fucker, so it wouldn't surprise me at all. Yeah.
I'm starting to think he realised the first one was a bit shit and it's kind of his get-out-of-prison card. That's my honest opinion, but we'll never know.
We'll never know. Go on then, Mark. 2005, what's your pick?
It was a close one between Into the Blue. Have you seen that with Jessica Alba?
Where the two people fall off the boat.
It's Jessica Alba looking brilliant in a bikini for 2 hours. I don't know if it's a story.
The whole reason it was going to be one of your choices because
it's Jessica, a joke.
Is it the one where two people fall off
is.
A boat?
Yeah, one of them is
Jessica Alba,
and the other one is
Jessica Alba,
the guy from Fast and Furious,
Paul Walker.
Yeah, but my actual choice was Serenity.
Good choice.
Weirdly, I was having this discussion with my mate Matt last night, who said, can you not talk about it too much? Because I'm about to watch it, because he's just finished the series. And I'm like, well, I won't spoil it, but we all have a massive love for Josh Whedon.
Whedon.
Josh Whedon.
Whedon.
he's the guy who talks with the Mac and me too.
He's coming in too. Josh Whedon.
Yeah.
We all love the Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Never seen it, so that's not why.
Me and Adam.
I love it.
Got a lot of time for him for
Angel,
that.
Angel, Dollhouse, Firefly.
Yeah,
Firefly, good, fantastic. Good. But this film obviously came out. I didn't see it at the cinema. I won't pretend and try and be cool and say I did. I got it on Blu-ray after watching Firefly, and I loved it.
Yeah.
I thought it was done perfectly. What I like most about him is the way that he can build characters, and this film's only 2 hours long, but you love all six of the main crew on the ship. His stories are great, and it's before he had massive, massive budgets, nowhere near what Avengers is. And after this finished, I then went and watched the series again, Firefly. And as a package, those two together work hand in hand. I love what Adam said about Batman Begins, and that was on my list. But this is something I've gone back and watched again. And I love The Dark Knight, and I love doing, you know, those two back to back. But Serenity is just sci-fi done well with one of the best people out there that could do it. And I know it's been many years and lots of talks. I'm hoping he revisits it in some way. He gives us more Firefly. He gives us another Serenity film, because it was the closest thing I got to like an alien style film feel, especially the aircraft and everything. They look fucking brilliant. But with the genius and writing of Joss,
and it's the Reavers as well.
Yeah.
Finally seeing
It's awesome.
I love that film, and I actually saw it before I watched Firefly, so I watched it as a standalone film with no prior knowledge, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
It worked.
It did.
It worked as a standalone.
Yeah.
But when you watch the series then, it's like, wow, even better. I wish I'd done what you'd done, but I never had the chance. But I was trying to think of the names, but Nathan Fillion.
Yeah.
One of my favourite actors after watching that film. And again, we're still waiting for him to do something else, because he's always the one that they can't quite get to
He's in Castle, isn't he, now?
Yeah, he's locked into a TV show.
Is that going to be cancelled?
I think it's on the bubble. I don't know if it's been renewed or not.
But I think he's always the one that holds up, because I know everyone else wants to do it.
Well, yeah, Josh has always said, he's like, I'd love to do it again, but it's about getting everyone together. And he specifically mentions Nathan's off doing Castle with that. I think it's ABC.
Well, cancel it then. Cancel Castle and let's do this now.
Should we get that going? Hashtag cancel Castle.
We're too busy at the moment with The Room 2. But after that, we'll do it.
Go on then, Ben.
And my pick is A History of Violence.
I had this down today, but I thought, nah.
Yeah. Have you seen this, Adam?
I've not actually, no. It's been on my list for 10 years now.
You would bloody love it as well. It's based on a graphic novel. It's directed by David Cronenberg and stars Viggo Mortensen, about a guy who's just an unassuming family man. He runs a diner. A couple of ne'er-do-wells come into his diner and start kicking off, and he ends up basically murdering them, like disarming them, doing all this, you know, fancy moves and shooting them in the head. and then he's this local hero, like, oh wow, you know, this local diner owner's killed these guys. Then two Irish mob types turn up and say, hey, how you doing, Joey? And he's like, I'm not Joey, I don't know who Joey is. And it turns out that he was this Irish mob guy who left to get away from it. And I won't give any more than that, because, you know, there's more to the tale and you haven't seen it yet, but it's absolutely brilliant. And David Cronenberg is a master of sort of poetic violence.
I think it's moving up my list already.
Yeah, get involved.
It's so good.
And it was the first of two films that he did with Viggo Mortensen. They then went on to do Eastern Promises, which is just as good. It's such a good film, Eastern Promises. I love those two as a duo. And then you've got Maria Bello's in the film, Ed Harris as well. William Hurt is in it. He plays Viggo Mortensen's brother, and he's in one scene that is less than 10 minutes long, and he was nominated for Best Supporting Actor because that is how much power he brought to this one scene. It's a phenomenal film. It's gory, it's dramatic, it's gripping, it's phenomenal. One of my favourite films.
I can't argue. I absolutely adore that film. The acting is amazing, and one of the most powerful sex scenes you'll ever see.
Yeah.
It literally, I'm not joking, it's not even a, oh wow, in like a sexual way. No, it's some of the most amazingly filmed and cinematography you've seen on this. Yeah. It literally leaves you cold.
It will be a tad of a spoiler for a sex scene, Adam, but I need to talk about it. It's basically him and his wife having really vigorous sex on their wooden steps in their house. And when they were filming the scene, Cronenberg actually said to his stunt director, have you got any sort of padding we could use? And his stunt director said, in all my years of working in stunts, it's the first time I've ever been asked for sex pads. But they did it without the pads, and apparently, like, Maria Bello got bruised to hell because it's such a vigorous scene. I mean, it's powerful stuff.
Amazing.
Yeah, great, great film.
That is one film I'm going to go and watch mm-hmm. tonight.
It's awesome.
Social media,
yeah.
We've had quite a few again, so thank you very much. Alex Valesso, Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire.
Nope.
He also did say, I want to give a massive shout out to Batman Begins and Fantastic Four.
Nope.
Nope, not the latter.
At Geek Region, Batman Begins without a shadow of a doubt. Big Therm, which is at Emma_Therm, the 40-year-old virgin.
Good film.
Very funny film. Stuart Howard, at Stuart Howard 74. Film I've not seen, but I've seen a lot of people go crazy for it. Cinderella Man.
No, I've not seen it either. Is it the boxing one?
Yeah,
I've heard really good things about it. Really good.
What's his name?
Russell Crowe?
Yeah, yeah. I want to see that. Christopher Rouge. R-O-O-C-C-H-I-O. Ruggio. Serenity. Good lad. Xavier Vargas, which is at True Miracle 85. This is what he's put. Batman Begins because it resurrected Batman after he thought it was completely dead and buried.
Yeah.
Good point. Going Nowhere Fast, which is at Primetime Guru, Sin City.
Yeah, good film.
Very good. And this one made me laugh. A good friend of the show, Warren John Hughes, contributes a lot, so thank you. After the Son of Mask and Adventures of Shark Boy and Lava Girl, it was a close one, Jarhead.
Very good film.
And I thought, really, that's like a really film. Good film I have not watched for a long time. I didn't realise it was 10 years old. So,
Is Jarhead the one that co-stars Django? What's his name?
Oh. Jamie
Foxx. Yeah. Because there's that scene where he just goes, I love this job. Because he loves being a soldier so much. That's a great film.
So, yeah, keep them coming. But next time we're going to 2004. Had a little peek at 2004 yet, lads?
I've had a little sneak peek, yeah.
I've not taken a look. I don't like to think of a year in which Batman Begins hadn't come out and Batman was still dead and buried.
Yeah, it's not good. So check out next time, 2004, and let us know yours on social media. Just go to skipcn.co.uk.
So it's time for a new feature. Ooh. And I've wanted to introduce a feature on the show for a long while that pits a bit of competition in there. I want
so
it to be...
It's not one of Mark's new features.
It's not one of Mark's new features, no. It is not drip to the end,
no, it's just
flip to the bend, whatever.
Oh, that's a new one.
It's none of these, no. It's a genuine feature. And it's called The Rating Game.
Nice.
And what it is I'm sure you guys are both familiar with IMDb's top 250 films of all time.
Nope.
Get involved, Adam.
Okay.
So the IMDb top 250 films of all time does exactly what it says on the tin. And it's a living, breathing list. It changes when new films come out, they enter the list. Old films fall off the list. The more people rate a film, the higher up it goes, the down it goes. But generally, it's fairly static. It doesn't move around too often. So what I want to do is introduce a game pitting one against the other, where you have to say whether one film is higher or lower in the chart than the other. It is effectively a rip-off, sorry, an homage to...
I love that. Get out,
the old British card-based game show, The Price is Right.
That's interesting. Mm. Obviously, it's very interesting when people do homages.
Yeah, it is an homage. So if anyone out there from ITV Studios claims otherwise, it's an homage.
And we appreciate homages, yeah. But not rip-offs.
Yeah, because homages, perfectly legal, yeah?
Yeah.
Perfectly legal.
Well, let's do this homage.
Let's do this homage. So, it's time to play the rating game. Who will be the Dark Knight and who will be Dark Shite?
Nice.
The first film is Die Hard.
Whoa.
And Die Hard is at number 120 on IMDb's top 250. So, Adam, we're going to take it in turns. You're going to go first. So, pick your first film.
Can I just say that's criminal? It should be higher already.
I would agree. Adam, read out your first film.
The Matrix.
So, The Matrix. Is The Matrix higher or lower than Die Hard?
I'm saying higher.
Higher?
Yeah.
You sticking with your first answer?
Higher.
It is higher. The Matrix is number 18.
18 out of 250?
So it's 100 places higher than Die Hard.
The third film should knock it down.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, obviously the rating got on that one, but I would agree. It should be banned from the list, all of the films.
That's a shit.
So, Mark, it's your turn now. So you're going to pick your film.
This is, whatever I pick is... This is quite exciting. Boyhood.
Boyhood. So do you think Boyhood is higher or lower than The Matrix, which is number 18?
It's got to be lower.
It is lower. It's quite a bit lower as well. It's 239. That's pretty low, isn't it? But then again, it's a relatively new film.
Yeah, it's done well. I thought it'd be quite high because a lot of people wank off over that film.
You certainly did.
I'll wank off over your Boyhood.
I don't know how that works, but okay. Adam, you're next.
After we've recorded.
Shame.
A Clockwork Orange.
Oh.
A Clockwork Orange. Adam, higher or lower than Boyhood?
It's got to be higher than Boyhood.
It is. It is quite a bit higher as well. It's 81, A Clockwork Orange. Very good film.
This is getting tense. A wigwam and a teepee. Too tense.
Brilliant.
Fargo.
Oh. Higher or lower than A Clockwork Orange at 81?
In my opinion, it should be higher, but I think it's probably lower.
It is lower. It's 152.
It's like sudden death already.
Yeah.
Jesus.
152.
I should be higher than that.
Yeah. Got them all right so far, lads. This is
good.
Going well. I might end up with a tiebreak situation.
Lock, stock, and
two smoking barrels. Is that higher or lower than Fargo at 152? Oh,
God.
Higher.
It is.
Whoa.
It's 137, Lockstock.
That is mad.
Isn't that ridiculous? How is that in the 250 at all?
I don't understand.
I like that film. It's a good bit of
fun.
But
it's not one of the top 250 movies ever.
Certainly not. It's not. It shouldn't be in the list at all. It certainly shouldn't be ahead of Fargo. That is a piss take.
While we're here, just because we've got a bit of time to kill, what did you think of the trailer today with the new Guy Ritchie film?
The Man from U.N.C.L.E.?
Yeah.
I thought that looked
decent,
actually.
I'm thinking that's starting to look really good.
Yeah, it looks all right.
It's nice if he comes back with a good film. And we had a role of doing him for ages. Oh, God. Interstellar.
Is Interstellar higher than Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels?
Annoyingly, I bet it fucking is, but it shouldn't be. So I'm going to go higher.
It is.
Because there's morons out there.
Do you know
where
Interstellar is?
I swear it's like top 20.
Please don't tell
28.
Me. You're joking.
28.
Me.
That absolute shower of shit. 28.
Other space films
shouldn't
are available
to.
And what you make sure to watch them, like Contact.
Jaws.
Adam, is Jaws... one of the greatest films of all time.
I think it is the best
higher
film.
Higher or possibly. Higher or lower than Interstellar?
As much as it kills me, lower.
It's significantly lower. Jaws.
Don't tell
but right, believe this, right? Jaws is 210.
Jaws is 210.
Interstellar is 28. May I remind you, Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels is 137.
Which idiots on IMDb are submitting these? Because Jaws should be in top 10.
Can we just start this game right now?
I just don't. Jaws for me is top 10. It's up there with, you know, your Clockwork Orange, the shot. It's the classic.
Yeah.
Have you Uwe read this list
right.
the wrong way around?
No. Uwe was right.
Uwe is right.
Yeah. IMDb, it's a sham.
This whole game was there basically to prove.
I could lose it all here.
You've got every single one right so far, both of you.
We're all winners.
Yeah.
Like the Paralympics.
Shame.
Oh, The Sixth Sense.
Okay, so what was the last one we had was Jaws, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So is The Sixth Sense higher or lower than Jaws?
See, this will just summarise everything. It's going to be higher.
It is.
Fucking
morons. 161, Sixth Sense.
And that was before he got really fat and ate himself. Remember?
Hey, Joe Osment.
What numbers are that?
It's 161.
Do you know what I mean? Better than Jaws by nearly 100.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
Ridiculous.
But slightly worse than Lockstock.
Oh, my God. Shame.
It's going to be difficult now.
Yeah.
Could he balls it all up now if he gets this wrong?
Yeah, well, you've got another one left as
American
well.
American Beauty.
Oh.
Okay, so what was the last one we had?
Sixth Sense.
So is American Beauty higher or lower than The Sixth Sense?
What number was Sixth Sense?
161.
Oh,
higher.
It is higher. American Beauty is 63 in the chart. Yeah.
Again, which, should be higher.
See, I disagree. I think it should be lower. It's a good film, but it's kind of like, meh.
Name me 62 films that are better right now.
Yeah, Ben, come on.
Can I get back to
you
on
that? Oh, by the way, I took on what Ben said and I went and watched the Kevin Spacey film.
Swim with Sharks.
Yeah. I just want to say now, Fair Play, one of the best films I've ever seen, and that acting is a masterpiece and his best work. So we do take on board what you say.
Phenomenal in that film.
Cheers, Ben.
Final pick, Mark.
A bit of conversation in here.
Final pick. Now, bearing in mind that Adam has got 5 out of 5, you've got 4 out of 5, this is your last one. Get this right, we go to a tie-break situation. Get it wrong, Adam is the winner.
I feel well tense, like I'm on bullseye. The Terminator.
Ooh.
The Terminator. Is it higher or lower than American Beauty at 63?
I'm going to lose it all, but I'm going to say higher.
It's lower.
Unbelievable.
It's 211, The Terminator.
What? Right next to Jaws.
My God.
It's one below Jaws, Terminator, yeah. And again, you know, just
I'm happy to lose.
Just to refresh your memory, Jaws and Terminator are 210, 211. Above them are Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels in The Sixth Sense and Interstellar.
This makes me sick.
Yeah.
It's a nice feature.
Yeah.
I like a bit of competition, but it's wound me up.
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, what was your tiebreak question?
My tiebreak, how the tiebreak's going to work in future is this. If it's a tie going into the final round, I will give you a film and you have to tell me where it is in the list. So let's do it anyway for a bit of fun.
Yeah.
The film is The Lion King. Mark, where is it in the list? What number?
136.
Adam.
So Jaws is 210.
Don't go by four.
You win, Adam. It's 54, so you're closer than Mark
was. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So you'd have won the tiebreak anyway. So on the leaderboard, after one round, Adam has 1 point, Mark has 0. I've yet to play. We're going to rotate this. Next time round, one of you is going to be the quizmaster. Who wants to be quizmaster next time?
I don't mind being...
I'll let Mark be quiz. I think it's important that I defend my crown on the list.
Fair play.
I like this.
And what I was thinking is what we could do. This time I've just gone through the whole list and gone from the whole 250. Why not? Let's do it by genre.
Yeah.
So next time do something like sci-fi or
war. Let's do comedies.
All right then.
That'll be good.
So next time we'll do a comedy ratings game.
I might stick a couple of Will Ferrell films in for Ben.
The whole IMDb ratings list appears to be a bit of a comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm
liking
laughing.
It. So back again in 2 weeks and I'll be the quizmaster.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant. Listener questions time. We all have this time.
Mm-hmm.
Let's kick in with a new listener, Al Robinson. Quite a weird question, but do you prefer French or Italian films overall?
Having seen Troll 2, which is an Italian film, I'm going to say French.
Yeah, the ratio so far points to French.
Yeah,
I'm going to go French just for Amelie.
Yeah.
We have at Squazzy Jer, which is J-E-R. What was the last book and the last film you each purchased?
The last book I purchased was The Disaster Artist.
Amazing.
Which is a book written by Greg Sestero, who played Mark. Oh, hi, Mark. In The Room. And it's written about his experiences making that film.
Yeah.
So that was the last book I bought.
Yeah.
The last film I bought. I don't really buy many films these days. I watch a lot of films. I go to the cinema a lot, but I don't really buy
much.
You
bought With Dale and I, didn't you?
I did. I got that, on Blu-ray.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nice. The last book I bought was Armada by Ernest Cline.
Yeah.
I haven't even started it yet. And the last, I can count it as a film, kind of. That one you suggested, the animation, Cowboy Bebop.
Oh, Cowboy Bebop.
I actually listened to what Adam Zenneman bought the whole lot on a Blu-ray box set, so I'm going to start that in the next few days.
Yeah.
Last film I bought was Whiplash.
Nice.
Cool. Steelbook, Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
And the last, it counts as a book. The last book I bought was Death in the Family.
Cool. Yeah. Good read.
At Trezner, not the one. Your favourite ever car chase?
Ooh.
I like whichever Fast and Furious is when they've got that like safe attached to the back. Is it Fast 5?
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. That's just a great action over the top scene. But
is it Darno's very good. Is it Bullet with Steve McQueen where he's like flying over the hills and peaks of San Francisco?
Awesome. Oh yeah, the Dark Knight when they're after. That's amazing.
That's well good.
Very good. We've had one from Andrew Routon who has put, have you ever bought a film more than once? So I suppose DVD, video.
Well, with Nail and I, I've got on DVD and Blu-ray.
I'm going to sound like the biggest nerd ever. I've bought The Thing 5 times now on Blu-ray. I got the Steelbook from Canada, England. Then they brought it out with the new one, which was dreadful. Don't ever watch that. I bought the original one. And then they did a Scream Factory special edition. Mm. God, I'm a sad person.
Rarely. I bought The Dark Knight on Blu-ray and then I got it as part of a Dark Knight trilogy as well. Collection, but one film that I actually have purchased twice just because I lost it and then found it again was The Last Samurai with Tom Cruise.
Shouldn't have bought it once.
That's bad.
I bought it and watched it. I was like, that's all right. But then I lost the disc. I couldn't find the disc anywhere. And I hated having this empty case there. So I went out and bought the disc.
Throw the case away, mate. Throw the case away. Don't buy the film again. It was like 99p
at That's Entertainment. So I was like, yeah, why not?
Other shops are available.
And then I found the original disc. I had 2 cases and 2 discs. And
did you then go out and buy a second empty case?
No, no, I already had the empty case. It's part of the... And now they're both in a charity shop somewhere, I imagine. Because I've given them charity and no one's going to have bought them in 3 years.
You can't get anything from now. You try selling a DVD or anything like that now. Penny.
Yeah. I mean, well, you can buy them new for like £1. So how are you going to get any resale value?
So that's it for questions. Nice short week, lads.
Yeah.
Keep your questions coming on Twitter at STTEpodcast, facebook.com/skipsTheEndPodcast, and you can email us podcast@skipstheend.co.uk.
So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. That's 25 done. Skip to the end. That is a quarter of a century down, boys.
That's a lot.
It is a lot, isn't it?
And it's a few episodes, isn't it?
It's pretty good going. And all the specials. I think we're on about 33 altogether now.
Yeah. I'm about done, I think. This is my last one.
Well, we've got Ted now.
See you later.
It's like literally, you get 1 year of Skip to the End, then we're done.
Yeah. In fact, we are very soon to come up to the year. I think in something like two more episodes, it will be our 1 year anniversary, which is phenomenal, really, that we've got that far.
If I'd said to you at the start of the year we'd get over 1 million listeners, you'd be like, what?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you? So
if you want us to continue, send us some money.
Yeah, that'd be good. Send us some money so we can buy some stuff. Yeah, that'd be nice.
Any of the good people from Strongbow are listening once again.
Guys, I know I've been quite vulgar on the last few weeks.
You know.
I've got a new idea.
Christ.
It's only a quick one.
That's what she said.
You know, we were listening and talking about The Room, and I think I mentioned a comment on how Tommy was annoying me by kissing the breast. Remember? And you said, you're some sort of expert.
You gave him 3 out of 10.
For his licking skills.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've been thinking about that sex scene and it was gross. The sounds itself, that his skin in his ass is not the nicest thing you want to see, is it? Let's be honest about it. It was horrible.
It is not.
It's not. No, I think I actually took photos and sent it to you both.
Yeah, you did, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, Adam, how's your sex life?
Yeah, really good.
Yeah, that's what, I love that. Anyway, I was thinking about sex scenes and I was thinking us three should go out there and try and find the best sex scene in films without it being degrading and being porn, which we don't like. So more of just, you know, these films that have good sex scenes and that. But I want to break it. I want to break it down to oral sex scene.
Oh, God.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So we saw the nipples being licked, the coffee stains having a bit of attention. And let's be honest about it, it wasn't very nice, was it?
Licked to the end.
There you go. How'd you like it? Ben's sitting here like he wants to kill himself. But I'm liking that Adam guessed it. Licked to the end.
He
like
was
it?
Literally joking when he said, "I'm done. I'm up." But now I don't think he did.
But think about it. Licked to the end.
I'm going to go to Skip to the End HR and hand in my resignation.
Just picture it. Licked to the end.
Stop doing that. He's doing it for the out there in Listenerville. He's doing a licking action along his own arm. I don't know why.
And he knows that we're time's short because I've got to ring Josh Weldon.
Who is the other one that I always got wrong? The guy from Superbad.
Jonas Hill.
Jonas Hill, you called him, yeah.
But yeah. Should we talk about next week? What we're going to do? What? Are you going to come back? Do another episode?
Let me have a week off and I'll think about
it. We're reviewing Fantastic Four.
That's a nice reason to come back.
I might really have to now.
We're also going to be talking about our top three worst casting choices in a film, my topic.
I'm definitely coming back then because I'm looking forward to talking about that one quite
there
a bit.
There you go, we're running back.
And what is our rewatch, Mark?
It's going to be the Wicker Man remake with Nicolas Cage. It was good, that set.
Another bees!
I've only seen it once.
This is a great film.
It'll be good to see terrible, that. Terrible. Get on board, everyone.
Yeah.
Take a watch.
We want to know your thoughts. And we're going to visit 2004.
We are.
Come back, Ben, please. Without you, we'll crumble. We'd never cope. Please?
Yeah, go on then, I'll turn up.
And I'll get you a Strongbow Dark Fruits.
Good lad.
Deez.
Anything else?
Nah.